Welcome to the System Speak podcast, a podcast about dissociative identity disorder. If you are new to the podcast, we recommend starting at the beginning episodes and listen in order to hear our story and what we have learned through this endeavor. Current episodes may be more applicable to longtime listeners and are likely to contain more advanced topics, emotional or other triggering content, and/or reference earlier episodes that provide more context to what we are currently learning and experiencing. As always, please care for yourself during and after listening to the podcast. Thank you. We have so many things to tell you. This episode will release it as soon as it's done, but we did not have it ready early this morning because we rested and played Gold Stars.
Gold Stars for playing.
We did good pacing. We did not push through things.
No.
Also, we did push through things.
A few. Yeah.
Like, just because it's a conference, so there's a lot to do. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to see. The sessions are very intense. People know this from, like, healing together. But this is the same. Even clinically, it's a lot to absorb.
Yeah.
But I guess the thing we just wanted to say right away is that we nailed the plenary.
You did so good.
There were a couple of funny behind the scenes issues happening. One is that, well, I guess it's not funny, but I was actually bleeding the whole time. Like, nobody knew this.
Fun fact, Emma was bleeding out on stage. Not really.
Oh my goodness, it sounds horrible. I do not mean any kind of intentional self-harm or anything like that. But I was like shaving and everything, getting ready to get ready. I had actually done a really good job just resting all morning. My session was supposed to start at 1:30 Texas time. And we got up and went down and got breakfast, but came back to the room. Did not go to sessions that morning. I went through my slides. I listened. I went through my slides again. I went to visit a friend. I came back. But I did not go to sessions that morning. And I was really proud of myself for sort of pacing my energy. And then I even took a nap. Like, I was so relaxed. Like, we did so well. We, my system, and we, us together, did so well. Trying to pace things, trying to not push in as much as you can at a conference, mm-hmm. and keeping things so balanced that I was so, so relaxed. But then I even took that nap. So I pushed the limit on how much time to get ready.
You guys, I was so scared because I was going down and it was like an hour and 20 minutes before your plenary. And you're laying down for a nap and you haven't showered yet. I was like, she's not going to make it. She's going to sleep through her plenary.
It was so hard. I was really proud of you for going and for not coming back. Because on your way out, you were like, are you going to sleep through your plenary? And then before I could even respond, you said, that is not my firewall. Also, when I woke up from my nap, I remembered to communicate to reassure, not that you needed rescuing, but to communicate, hey, I'm awake, everything's fine, I'm going to go shower.
Yes, thank you.
Except because I had taken a nap, I was trying to hurry a little bit, and our shower is kind of wonky. It's kind of weird to get the water going, and it's not enough water, very low pressure. Like some high pressure water.
I do. It's not a great shower.
It really wasn't.
It's really a bad shower if you have to shave.
It is. Like, there's nowhere to put your feet. And what? I know some people don't shave, respect, but I'm a shaver of all the things. And like, I was just trying to shave my leg and it was a new razor because I had forgotten my razor at home. And you guys, my foot slipped and I do not even want to talk about it because it was like a horror movie. Mm. Like, it was not a little nick.
No.
It was bad. And so, like, basically for the plenary, I didn't just have like a Band-Aid on a small little nick. Like I had cotton pads and things like against it with compression socks over it, holding it in place. I was like, don't pass out and don't leave blood on the stage. Like it was really bad and nobody knew that was happening. That was probably too much information. I'm sorry we started this with such graphic details.
Welcome to the System Speak Horror Podcast.
Oh my goodness. The other thing that happened behind the scenes is that they did the timer clock wrong. Mm-hmm. They have a timer up on the stage that only the speaker can see, so that you know when you're almost out of time and you're supposed to start wrapping it up. But so two things went wrong. One, they had the timer set for only my time of speaking, but I thought it was for the whole session. Mm-hmm. Like no one clarified, we didn't get that got miscommunicated or not communicated. So I thought by the end of the timer, I had to be off the stage.
Yeah.
So I was rushing to try to wrap things up. But the other thing is they started the timer when I was getting introduced, like as soon as Michael Coy went up on stage. Mm-hmm. And I did request him to be the one to introduce me and be my moderator, because we've worked a lot together. Yeah. So we have a good rhythm. And then that ended funny because we ended up dancing on the stage at the end.
It was amazing.
It was so funny. But anyway, as soon as he went on the stage, they started that timer. Mm-hmm. But that was my speech time. And I could tell by how the timer was set that it was mostly just mine, that it was not the intro time, but I thought it did include Q&A. So I was like plowing through slides. Like I went through so fast and I thought I went 2 minutes over, and they're like, no, we have a half hour left. And I'm like, no.
Oh, how devastating. You thought you were done.
Yes.
And you had more questions, more and more questions.
I intentionally had a slot of slides. You guys, literally the math was 1.8 slides per second.
She was zooming through those things.
Yes. So I thought I filled up the time so that I would not have to deal with questions and answers. But I did, and they did have questions, and I did give answers, and
before we jump into that, can I just say how amazing all the things you said were, like all the presentation, that 1.8 slides per second information.
Oh my goodness, I hope. Mm-hmm. In the handouts, I put my full like 6 hour presentation slides in. So I want people to have the documentation, people who really want, or so that I can reference and say, I gave you this. I know some people won't ever look or don't care, but the people who really want to look into that or have the resources cited, mm-hmm. it's all there.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I tried really hard. I practiced so much. Mm-hmm. This morning I woke up and I was like, there's not a plenary to listen to. And I read the news and listened to some music, and it was so nice.
It's been a year that you've been stressed out about the plenary.
It has been a huge deal. But I'm really proud of myself. Not like, ooh, I'm awesome. But like,
you're awesome.
Well, thanks. But I worked hard. Yeah. Like the research, the preparing the slides, the practicing, the rehearsing, listening to the podcast of it over and over mm-hmm. again. Like, since it got recorded and scheduled to go up, like over and over and over and over to get it mm-hmm. in, and getting my slides, not just prepared, but like, I was like, I don't care that everyone can see the same thing I can see, but like putting stars and things in places. And I was like, if any of me gets lost, like just look for these things. Like I put visual cues in case there was any switching or nervousness or blending, so that I would not get lost, like to like anchors or something, trying to make sure I was connected to my slides visually and I had it in me from listening over and over. So like I worked so hard, so hard.
John Mark told us all about how hard you were working.
That's so funny.
He'll be so relieved he doesn't have to hear it anymore.
Right? Yeah. Let's talk about littles for just a minute. Not directly, because who wants to do that? But we did also take the day before as kind of a yes day together to try and play a little bit to balance out the intensity. So we went to those intense attachment sessions that were super epic.
Yeah.
And then also the day before the plenary, we also had like some basic required ones we had to do.
Right.
One on consulting and one on suicidality, which is just required for us. So we're like, we have to check these boxes. Mm-hmm. But we spent the morning. Tell them where we went.
We went to the world of Barbie. I didn't even know it was a thing. We were here early this last week and looking, I was just looking at my Facebook feed. And of course, because the algorithms know everything about you, they knew where we were. And they're like, hey, do you want to go to World of Barbie? It's 1 mile away. Literally.
Yes. Yes, we do.
So we went to the mall, of all places, like how the mall, and went to the World of Barbie, which was like a whole the department store sized place.
Like a JCPenney's or something, like cleared out the entire space was life-size Barbie-ness.
Yes, it was like scenes from the movie. Like they had the kitchen and they had a dressing room.
The beach,
they had beach.
We took our picture at the beach.
And then they, what else?
Just beach.
It's just peach.
Oh, they had this spaceship, like the airplane, mm-hmm. and we got to go inside. And then the other people that were in there were like left, mm-hmm. and they had the simulation video. So we got to dance in space.
We did.
We had a moment.
And then the floor started moving.
So we were done.
Yeah. We also played with buttons in space, which was very fun for littles.
We did almost lose out to littles with all the buttons. You could push buttons and switches like as part of the plane and lights went off. And it was very cool and very fun, but we did almost lose to littles. I think if there had not been other people at this event, like you had to get tickets and everything. Mm-hmm. And if there had not been other people there, I think we would have lost ourselves a bit there.
Yeah.
But it was great. They had the camping van.
Mm-hmm.
I got to sit up front and honk the horn.
Which you did not know was a horn and so scared you.
It was like we had played with all these other switches and buttons and things. And so I just pushed that button too and it was like, wah, wah. It scared me so bad.
The camper, Barbie takes food camping. And I just have to point out, as a native camper who grew up camping, she doesn't know how to camp.
She's a little prissy camping. Glamping.
She took uncooked spaghetti noodles and a ceramic butter dish.
It's not what you take camping.
No.
They also had like a science girl area with the periodic table of the elements, and they would give you different things. Like, I think we got laundry detergent or something.
Sodium nitrate? Was that what it was?
So we had to find the sodium and the nitrogen and the oxygen and like put them in to make our laundry detergent.
Sodium sulfate. That's what it was.
There we go.
It was sulfur. Yeah, it was sulfur.
All right.
But
it was sodium, sulfur and oxygen made laundry detergent.
Yes.
So now we're very clean, just so that you know.
Yeah, you know. It was really cool though. The periodic table was like in pink.
Yes!
I loved it.
And they had a chemistry section where you added things, put it in.
Mm-hmm.
It was very cool. They also had a really neat museum.
Yeah.
I liked the Barbie movie for lots of reasons, and actually it was really powerful to me as part of therapy. And seeing clearly the codependence with Nathan, and Nathan and I talked about that, I think, on the podcast, but it was really, really powerful for me in being like, I don't actually have to stay with how things are, even though he is good and kind, or even though the children and I are safe or whatever, that's not the same as just being me mm-hmm. and needing to live my life. So I don't know, it was really, really powerful to me. But I loved that in the museum, it had the woman's actual picture mm-hmm. and that
the creator.
The creator of Barbie mm-hmm. and that we got to actually see her picture and some history. And then it was cool to see some of the old dolls and mm-hmm. the stories, like they had a museum of the actual dolls.
Yeah. Like they had one of the original Barbies there. And then they had the first careers, I think. So there was like a flight attendant and a doctor.
Executive.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
But like the original dolls from the 60s or whatever.
And they had more photo boxes, but they were like sturdy ones and with costumes. And we posed for some pictures for the girls.
That was fun.
It was super fun. And then we just walked around. We found a chocolate store and a soap store and...
A Lego store.
I don't know why that missed on the list. It's blurry. We saw a carousel.
In the mall.
It was super fun just to go for a walk and get out of the conference environment for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really helpful. And then we came back and... did some required sessions, kind of the getting consulting. Ourselves back into conference a little bit.
Well, I mean, we did consulting and suicide, so we jumped in head first.
It was intense. So a couple things that, one is that, so they have heard the attachment strategies ones from Ana Gomez. All of that was actually just the very first morning.
Yes, and we haven't even finished recapping that.
We have not even finished. And then we went to other things in the afternoon. The next day, we were in hypnosis training for the day. And so that, we will just recap another time.
Yeah. We were also in trance all day.
Oh my goodness, it was tense. I was like, I'm out. I can't.
It was a lot.
I was proud of myself for just being like, I'm just going to call it.
Mm-hmm.
That is my best and it is enough. I think I got to speak to the woman who was presenting that, though.
Mm-hmm.
Wendy Lemke, and she's going to come on the podcast.
Yeah, she's so good.
Right? And then after... Oh, sorry,
I just want to add, she does hypnosis and ego state therapy, like together both in there.
That's why specifically it's so good. Not yeah. just random hypnosis, yeah. like really intentional DID specific.
Yeah.
And she's very, very safe mm-hmm. and very, very approachable. So I really liked that. And I'm excited to have her on the podcast. So we will recap that sometime eventually later. I'm not even going to worry about it right now because we're not pushing.
Yes.
Right. And so then the next day we went to Barbie World. And then after Barbie World, we went to a training for consulting. There's nothing really to recap for that so much. Not because we're being clinical snots. It's just about literally the difference between being a therapist, supervision, and consulting.
Right.
And coaching, even, she referenced of like what it is and what it's not. So like, we can talk more about that later as things come up. But mostly that was just for our office of mm-hmm. checking that. The suicidality one was really intense, and I want to be careful about that on the podcast because I know it's such a sensitive issue. And also, it's a really, really important one to talk about. I know that we've talked about it in the past, like what happened in 2020 or like safety plans after the retreat. So I don't want to skip over it. It's also tricky because we have legal issues for, especially getting into the 501c3, for what we can actually talk about in the community mm-hmm. because we're at peer support level
yeah.
and not therapy level. So it's really hard because sometimes when people really need help, we have to sort of steer them to other resources. And that's hard because it feels like a relational trauma when someone needs help the most. But it's literally just a legal issue and something that we can't sidestep if we're going to keep the community open as it is.
Yeah.
So it's a protective factor for everyone. But is there, like, I don't mean to just transition into full recap, but is there anything that was really especially significant that you felt like truth bombs or anything to share about that? I wrote some notes that I may come back to later. I think I need to take them to therapy first.
Sure. Well, I think I would add that it was on self-harm and suicidality and the difference in those, which I liked. I like when people can separate them because self-harm so often is not about suicidality, but also sometimes linked. And did you already say that it was Lynette Danielchuk that did the presentation?
I did. She's not.
So compassionate about it. Like, it was such a good training.
She is one of the clinicians of ISSDD who has come to my 6-hour training on plurality and really has adapted her language and her approach in response. Like, I feel like she's one of the ones who received what I had to say, respected me as a colleague, and also has implemented the things that she learned. So that's something I appreciate about her.
Yeah. I think just the pieces that stand out for me that I highlight, like I bolded in my notes, was she talked about the bad guys in the system, like the persecutors or interjects, you know, the ones that tend to be mean. Like,
and like our abusers, mm-hmm. where we're doing to ourselves what right. they did.
So she said that they are often the most harmed in the system, and they're the reason the system is still alive, and the reason that there is any innocence left in the system at all.
Whoa. So coming up soon on the podcast, I had Rick Huffler mm-hmm. come back to talk about protectors, and he said the same thing about yeah. the same thing my therapist said.
The same thing your therapist
about
said.
About protectors being the most vulnerable.
And the most in need of care.
And in the most in need of care. That piece alone is hard enough to wrestle with. Mm-hmm. But you just added 2 more layers to that. Can right. you say it again?
Well, they're the reason. Well, they're the most harmed. The reason that they're still alive.
Whoa. Explain that.
Well, she talked about how sometimes suicidality keeps people alive because it's this option that they can take if they need it. And so it keeps people going through the really hard times. Does that make sense?
Because having an option means you can also not choose it.
Right.
Even though circumstances are hard.
Yeah.
As opposed to circumstances are hard and I have no choice about it and it's endless.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's just about presenting the choice, even though it's not actually what you want to choose.
Right. It's still giving that choice. And also just protecting the system in such an unhealthy environment by like reenacting, but that made it safe enough for the system to live. So that's what I remember about her saying, that they're the reasons that we're still alive. And then she also said that they are the reason that there is any innocence in the system at all.
Yeah, you're going to have to explain that because I'm already like glazing over.
Uh-huh, I can feel it. Do we need to breathe?
I'm great.
It sounds like what she was meaning is they're like this. I don't know if you've ever put like a piece of bread in a container of brown sugar to keep it from getting hard. If you put bread in there, it soaks up the moisture so the sugar stays soft. It's like that, where this persecutor person kind of absorbs all the evil and nastiness that is done to us to keep the innocence in the littles.
Oh my goodness.
That makes sense.
Oh, that I don't like how that feels, but yes, it makes sense. I mean, I guess technically I do like how that feels, but the reality of that and the need for that makes me very uncomfortable.
Right.
Hey, that was a good distinction.
It was. And a good holding both, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So really, it's important to be understanding and compassionate towards them because they've had the worst job.
Okay. Anything else? We can circle back to this another time too, but anything else?
So with that, she said persecutors are warriors. She called them warriors, which I appreciated.
Way to go, Care Busters.
And then the last thing she was talking about was for therapy, we listen to the most vulnerable part in the system and go at their pace. Which I felt like I needed to hear.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Not your stuff. You can take that to therapy. But what does that mean to you about going at the pace of the most vulnerable rather than, hey, I'm going to do all the things right now, get better, healed in 12 hours.
Oh my goodness, that came up last night, right?
It made me laugh.
Well, I think partly it means that you have to actually listen to littles that are scared and don't want to talk about or look at things. And it also means listening to the warriors who are like, no, we're not ready yet. You can't go there. Because if they're the most vulnerable, there's a reason they're saying no.
Oh, I had not connected that. I already lost that piece.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like littles or trauma holders.
I mean, really, persecutors are warriors, are trauma holders, like the hardest trauma holding, and usually started little.
Wow. I don't want to rehash all of this because people haven't heard it yet, and I don't mean to say what I already said. But on that episode with Rick, I talked about how I feel like with my first therapist, one of the things that happened was that bad feelings or hard feelings, like I know there's no bad feelings, but at the time in shiny, happy world, there are bad feelings. And so if I felt angry or sad or something, it was harder to feel those things, like those pieces felt kicked out of therapy, which I think is part of why therapy was, even though it had been so good and there was so much good content and information that came from that, it was also making me sicker because it was actually making me more dissociative.
Because you had to deny those other pieces.
Right.
So it was almost like there was good phase one partial work.
Right. Absolutely. Holding both. Lots of good stuff that came out of it, but then also going back to therapy now, I feel like protectors are involved in therapy in the way they never have been, partly because my therapist is very different. Remember when I kept finding the wrong therapist, like it wouldn't work and it wouldn't work, and I was like, I need someone the opposite of shiny, happy therapist. That is what I got. My therapist now is very real, can also be vulnerable, but is very real.
Yeah.
And I needed that. But because we've been through all this, my protectors are like, no, we've got therapy. You don't even go to therapy anymore. Like, we will take care of it.
Right.
Which is weird, but that's why therapy is working, because they're finally included.
Well, and they're the ones that we have to go at their pace. And they're getting to set the pace and be there.
I feel like the last year of therapy, not everything and not every session and not every minute of every session, but primarily has been, here are all the reasons my life is still hard and why I'm so frustrated about that. Like just blah, every time. So it makes more sense in context and going at that pace, but I also feel better more than I ever have in my whole life.
That matters.
right? It's a big deal. And it is also giving, I don't want to admit this, but it also gives me access to strength that I think is missing when my protectors are kicked out of the system.
Well, yeah.
Right? So because now they are included and even participating in therapy and safe and stable, I have so much more courage and strength to do things. Like, my therapist and I don't talk about, like, hey, this, I mean, sometimes I get homework or think about this or what about this or write this, but it's never like, hey, you need to go think about this decision and solve it, and then let's make a plan to work on this decision. It's like all of this is coming out of me. I can see myself clearly, and then I just know when this stuff is happening, and I'm making different and better decisions for myself than I did in the past. And not because she's telling me, but because I can see clearly and I have the strength to follow through.
Yeah. Can I be a nerd for a minute? A gamer nerd for a minute?
Oh, are you I'm so glad you're finally sharing this part of you so that we can talk about it.
Oh, so I have played, MMOs online for like 15 years. Anyway, if you're going through a dungeon, which is the hard part in the game, you have a party of people that you take. And one of the important roles is a tank, a warrior usually, that goes out front and has all the strength to like take the big hits from the bad guys to protect everyone else. And you cannot get very far at all if you don't have a good tank. And if you're trying to do therapy without your protector warriors, you're gonna get wiped so fast. Like, it won't even, it will just be sad. It will be like when you tried to play and you went up to the dragon over and over and died.
And I can't even find my body. Yeah. I'm just blinking.
That's what it's like if you don't have a tank. And so our persecutors are our tanks.
Well, and that's why you have to work with each other.
Yeah.
I have to be my own guild.
You have to be your own guild.
What just happened in my head?
That's amazing.
Oh my goodness.
I like that. Instead of host, it's a guild master.
Whoa. I don't know what just happened, but I felt things.
They're all gonna know I'm such a nerd now.
Oh, it's delightful.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So, therapy.
Therapy.
Okay, so that was the day before the plenary.
Uh-huh.
The morning of the plenary, I relaxed until I was bleeding. And then I stood there in pain, like, don't pass out, just keep talking, don't pass out. Like, talk about dissociation. I was like, my foot hurts to stand on it, and now I have to stand here for an hour and a half. It was very grounding. Like, it was not intentional self-harm, but it worked.
But also, the stage moved, like, shook a little bit, so how is that grounding?
Well, I just did not move.
I'm like, sorry.
Oh, that was so traumatic. But it was actually really, really good.
Yeah, you did really good.
For clarity, I meant dramatic, not traumatic.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And it was the combination of the bleeding and the nerves that felt so dramatic.
Yes.
Yeah.
The plenary itself, I feel like, went really well.
I'm sorry. We've been watching these birds all week. Fight. It's the weirdest thing. There'd be two male birds fighting, and the woman has wandered away. They were just flying outside our window fighting in the air.
That's why I'm gay.
Sorry. Totally got distracted by the fighting birds. They're gone now.
Springtime in Texas. So, the plenary, I think, went fine. I thought I would have trouble getting started, but I really kind of didn't. I could see my interpreter. I could see Susan. Susan is my little friend who is adorable and kind and very sweet to me and has been one of my safe people at the conferences. She's a clinician. Is she in Colorado? Because she was in Denver. But she's also been at Seattle and all the places.
Mm-hmm. Her name tag said Colorado.
I think she's in Colorado. But I love Susan very much. She is very, very kind to me. She has always been very kind to me. And she made sure that she sat right in front of the podium so that I could see her.
Yeah.
And it was maybe the sweetest, most lovely, nurturing moment until I also saw my therapist.
Right?
I don't need no nurture. Those walls went right back up. We're just here to talk and bleed.
Oh my goodness.
I think there were a couple times where I stumbled just a little bit, but I never got like lost. There were a couple times where I couldn't say the word in English and had to try again, but I was able to keep going. It reminded me of like a piano recital. When you're in a piano recital or a performance, if you make a mistake or get lost, you just have to keep going. Play anything, just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's true for any instrument. But like when you're, that felt like that of like, okay, that was bad, but I'm just going to keep going. And I saw the clock turning red and I was like, okay, so I even skipped some slides.
Yeah.
I mean, the people had a lot more in their handout than what I was actually presenting because I wanted them to have the full evidence of my citations. Yeah. I think it's so, so important that we're citing properly because otherwise it's either opinion, not actually research, or we're plagiarizing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like people at the beginning of presentations will give land acknowledgement. We also need to give wisdom acknowledgement.
Yeah.
I didn't make all this up, but I also didn't just learn it for myself. I learned it from other people's studies, and that's why citations are so important.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that later on the panel, which we'll get to in just a minute, but that's just one thing about being an educated consumer online is knowing the difference between someone who's just saying things and someone who is using actual research and citing their sources.
Yeah.
That's really, really important.
Yeah.
So I think all of that went okay.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that was funny is at the beginning, when Michael Coy started to introduce me, he like did all the boring announcements. You need to check in this way and the mm-hmm. exits are out to your sides and here's how to
put on your seatbelt.
Right? All the introduction stuff. But then he said, it is my pleasure to introduce Emma. And everyone just started clapping.
Uh-huh.
Like, he didn't even get through the bio. So I was like, am I supposed to go up or no?
Everyone was so excited.
It was kind of funny.
It was great. He was like, let me tell you about her first.
Then he read the long, boring bio. That's so awkward when you have to just stand there while they do that, but they require it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's like citing your resource. Like, why do I get to be on stage and say the thing?
Mm-hmm.
And it's tricksy because I talked about this in a private conversation with someone this weekend. One thing that has frustrated me, and I know last year online things were really hard, but one of the things that got said online was that I was just a token for ISSTD.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple reasons why that frustrated me. One is that there's actually lots of people with lived experience, both at ISSTD and other organizations and places. And just because someone's not out.
Keep going, but I have a thought.
Just because someone is not out doesn't mean that their experience is not valid. And just because they're not public with their lived experience does not mean that they don't have it. And when I get called out as a token or being tokenized, these people are my friends, so I don't feel like a token. I'm the one who gets to say if I'm a token or not. And when someone says I'm only token, it invalidates all of my hard work, all of my own research, all of my effort, my education, my work experience, my, like, it invalidates me.
Right. All of your right to be here.
Yeah, I worked hard for this. And so I was not just invited just because of lived experience. Like, I worked hard and then worked hard to do it well in really impossible circumstances. Yeah. So that actually hurt my feelings a lot when that came up.
Yeah.
That was like a long time ago, though, by the way. That was not new that I know of.
Right. When you were talking about a token and all the lived experience, I thought about that idea of a tank that's out in front protecting everyone else. Like, so you were already out with your lived experience, and you also have all of this like research and knowledge and experience that you have earned to give you the space legitimately, but you get to serve in this role of like being a warrior for the people in ISSTD who maybe aren't safe to be out or who don't feel okay having their lived experience shared. And so even in that role, you get to like be a spokesperson, not a token.
Right. It's one of the things I said and talked about during the question and answer period, because there's a lot of people, I think this is true whether people are queer or whether people have lived experience or whether people have other mental illnesses or whether people, like anything, your life is your business. It's not anyone else's business. And yes, there are times it's really important to use privilege or safe spaces of being like, I have a platform by default, to use that well, to be an ally for others who do not have privilege. That is really important. We are responsible for that. And also, there's lots of ways to do that. So I thought about, you've shared on the podcast a couple times that you are not someone who can go to protests for lots of reasons, but you are someone who is a therapist for people who can go to protests or support those people in other ways so that they can have the good care that they need to do what they do. Mm-hmm. Right? So like for me right now, I can't do deployments because I have a responsibility to my children and to my family and to my own healing. So I can't do that anymore like I could before. And it's been really hard to watch like what's happening in the Middle East right now and to not be able to be there on the ground helping people I know, to literally watch colleagues die, to literally get reports and phone calls from people in danger, dying or hungry, and I can't help them or get there. Like, that's awful. But I can help from here in the context of what is good and healthy for me. And those are really hard conversations, but I think that it's the same for people who are queer or people who have lived experience. It's not safe for everyone. I say that a lot on the podcast in the context of DID Awareness Day. If it is safe for someone to come out on Coming Out Day, whether that's queerness or DID or anything else, if it is safe and you have support and you can do that in a way and want to use that day, that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. If you want to do it in your own way in other times and spaces, that's okay too. But if it is not safe for you, it is not wise to come out. And there are lots of reasons that people with lived experience cannot be out about their diagnosis.
Right.
I understand at the same time, it's important for those who are by default like me or have privilege enough like others to do so, that coming out can be very meaningful and powerful and empowering both to them and to others, but it is always at a cost, and it is always at a cost you cannot take back.
Yeah.
So it's a huge decision and not one to be taken lightly. And the people who cannot come out with their lived experience are absolutely as valid as those who do.
Yeah.
Their experience is still just as real. Their choice for safety and protection is just as important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what else happened in question and answers?
There were some funny questions. I don't know if you... Well, there were some questions that led to funny answers.
I know what you're talking about. So one question that I got was something about my treatment plan. Uh-huh. And in a way, it was interesting because two experiences were happening at the same time. in one context, I had just given a speech about microaggressions and how when people ask questions without thinking of what that's like, that they're othering them. So it's a, like, what do you mean? What is my treatment plan? My treatment plan is just like anyone else's treatment plan.
Yeah.
And so there's that. And then there's also just the boundaries of my treatment plan is not your business.
Right.
And also the person who is asking, despite the boldness of the question, is someone I know a little bit. Mm-hmm. So was it appropriate to ask after the plenary? Probably not. But also I know it was not malicious and I do know the person and they are trying hard to learn. And it was more important to me in that moment to tend to them mm-hmm. than to be like, what are you doing? This is what I just talked about not doing.
Right.
You know, it's like people coming up to pet my daughter's hair because their braids are beautiful, but then they're othering blackness.
Yeah.
This is unique and different because you're black. Mm-hmm. And so it's a racist thing to touch their hair. Leave them alone.
Yeah.
This felt like that. What is your treatment plan?
Right. They wouldn't ask other researchers who weren't talking about lived experience what their treatment plan and therapy was.
Nobody would ever ask someone's treatment plan in public.
No.
So, like, how did I handle it is the question.
It was amazing.
So, I was like, you're asking my, like, first I repeated mm-hmm. just out of, like, what just happened. I was like, you're asking what my treatment plan is? So, I was like, well, number one, stay alive. And then I talked about like different things, just like other people, like, for example, getting ready to come to do the plenary. We did a lot of talking about that, talking about how to practice saying things that I don't necessarily need to tell everybody else. Like when my children are wearing me out or exhausting, it's not actually healthy for me to tell the children that, but I can tell my therapist.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was also like, or I'm dealing with a lot of religious trauma. So one of my treatment goals has been to buy fancy underwear.
And you said it.
I said it out loud and everybody laughed so hard.
It was amazing because it's so real and genuine, right? Like, that's a thing. And it really made a difference in your life. Like, it was important.
Right.
Therapeutically and logistically.
What's funny, anyone who remembers that or thinks back on it are going to think I mean like fancy underwear. And I'm like, yeah. Boxers, boy shorts.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could, it was about reclaiming your freedom of what you chose as your underwear.
Right.
Yeah.
What else did people ask? Do you remember? Oh, there was someone, a very ancient someone. Oh. Who asked, why do we care about this?
He asked it in a very kind and gentle way. But really, his question was like, as a clinician who probably won't ever see these folks, why do I need to know about plurality if it's not distressing? Kind of.
Right.
So
I just clarified cultural sensitivity to accept people as they are when they come in for services,
yeah.
And then also to not focus on it. If someone is not distressed or bothered by their plurality, what else do they need help with?
Right, because they're probably not coming to you for that if it's not distressing.
Right.
But if it is distressing and they identify as plural, it's important for you to know that. You can't just tell them, no, you're dissociative and traumagenic and you're wrong in your identity. Like, that's not culturally sensitive.
Right.
You did a good job of answering it.
Oh, thanks. Anything else from plenary that you can think of?
You got a lot of amazing comments of like, thank you, and you made me cry, and this is so important, and I really appreciate you, all of that.
Aww. I hope it was okay. I hope listeners have been able to hear it, that it went up and all that. I have not even had a chance to check.
It did go up. Okay. I checked while you were talking and it was up.
Okay.
So you did the timing thing right.
Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so after the plenary, I was supposed to go to the book signing,
mm-hmm.
but I actually could not get out of the room because people were talking to me, which is fine. That's lovely and important. And also, then they just started bringing their books. So it took me a while to actually get to the book table to do any book signings because people just started bringing the books into the plenary room.
No.
But I got to see people and yay for selling books. And they sold a lot of books, and the ones that they didn't were donating to Beauty After Bruises.
That's amazing.
So that will be really good and important. And then after the book signing, I had to, again, get through the crowd, also stop and change my bandage.
Yes.
So I was almost late for the panel because I had to get from the book signing and then change my bandage in my compression sock.
And also go to the bathroom.
Well, and then my foot was so swollen, I couldn't get my shoe back on. Oh. So I was barefoot for the panel.
I did not know that.
Oh my goodness, such an adventure. But the panel actually went really well. Mm-hmm. So I actually got to have several conversations with Dr. Robinson this week. Mm-hmm. And this weekend, you also got to meet him. Yeah. And it was really, really good. I think it was really, really productive and really, really helpful. I also just really like him in real life.
Yeah.
Like, he is very kind and understanding, has also been through a lot, as has anyone mm-hmm. who works with DID, because there's so many people who don't want DID to be a thing. But it is. Right? Like, we can't not make it a thing because it is a thing. Yeah. And now there's so much science that backs that, that it's not even just he said, she said, mm-hmm. right? Like, we know that it's a thing. I also learned, okay, don't laugh at me, but I learned and worked really hard on saying it correctly. As a deaf person especially, and as a podcaster, I say things wrong all the time. He did not correct me. I just learned. I just want to be clear and explicit. He did mm-hmm. not be like, hey, you have to say this right. That is not how it went down at all. I just literally asked and then had to practice to get it right. The hospital is actually McLean. Mm-hmm. McLean. The cl is really hard for me as a deaf person.
Is it?
But it is McLean Hospital. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I got to have lots of conversations with him. He is going to come on the podcast later, is my understanding. Obviously, we're still in Texas right now. And I also have interviews scheduled like through the summer. So it will be a while before it airs. That is not any kind of drama. That is pragmatics of scheduling mm-hmm. and of me pacing my life. Yeah. But he will be coming on the podcast. I think Melissa Kaufman is also going to come on the podcast, and I'm really grateful. I've gotten to talk to her as well, and good conversations, and I can say McLean.
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 Yeah.
It's really hard. I have to practice. McLean. Maybe they can come on the podcast now because I can say it properly.
Maybe. That part.
That feels shiny, happy. Oh. If I can say it right, then I earn my presence.
No.
Right. Funny. Okay. So seriously, McLean. Mm-hmm. And also, we had the panel and Dr. Robinson was already in there. And so I was like, hey, can I sit by you? We'll make a statement. It was funny. It was not online, this panel. I thought it was going to be, but it was not. So it was people in the room, and there were also lived experience people in the room, including mm-hmm. Holly. Holly was here for the film Petals of a Rose, so I just want to give it a shout out. Mm-hmm. And I think it's okay. I don't think I'm disclosing anything because she shared some on social media as well. Mm-hmm. They did, but they were there, and the panel actually went really well.
Yeah.
It was intense for me. As someone not knowing what is happening and as a survivor, that I didn't have information till the last minute. But also, I did a good job advocating and following up with emails of saying, hey, what's happening with the panel? Hey, what's happening with the panel? So I'm actually really proud of myself. I also think the other thing I was proud of for myself is that because I had all the hard conversations and said all the hard things before we ever even got to Texas, that once I got here, there wasn't even anything for me to feel scared about or nervous about because I had faced it all.
Yeah.
Like even in my anxieties or worries about what is going to happen on the panel or this or that, everything was fine. Mm-hmm. And I think I did a good job of acknowledging all of my feelings, all of my thoughts and feelings before I got here. And so even though it was much easier than expected, I think part of what was easier was I just got out of my own way. Like I said the things, I said my thoughts and feelings, and then it was like, okay, what's actually happening?
You also asked for what you needed.
Yes. Right? Mm-hmm. And it made a big difference. I also think that even though I am just now starting to ease back into, I have parts that maybe should be acknowledged and included in participation, that part of saying all the thoughts and feelings are not like, this is fact, this is what's happening, but this part is anxious about this, and this part is anxious about this, or what if this happens? And I had so much support from the community and so much support from colleagues and so much support from friends that I just really felt empowered to simply come and be myself.
Yeah.
Which opened up a whole new, really integrated experience. I don't want to use integrated the old way.
You mean inclusive?
Yes. I said inclusive in the
plenary.
But it really was a very integrated experience, including lots of parts of me of everyone really got to say the things. So once we got here, it was like, let's just do the thing.
Yeah.
And I never even really got nervous or anxious. And I just sat down there without any shoes on and and it went fine. It really went very well. I met, is it Anne Gill?
That sounds right. Yeah.
I met her. She's also going to come on the podcast. I got to sit next to her talking about the work she does with children and keeping them safe online or caring for them when things have happened. Mm-hmm. Which is so, so tragic. Michael Salter was there, who I know from the board of ISSTD. I met him in 2020, right before the pandemic. He actually gave me COVID in 2020, which is a whole different story. But we sat next to each other at a dinner, and then the whole thing was canceled because of COVID. We had it, me and Michael.
Yeah, fun.
So I was worried about, like, would people get a turn? I feel like anytime there was something I wanted to say, I just raised my hand and they passed the microphone.
Yeah.
I did not feel anything in my panel was mansplained. I did not feel anything in my panel was talking over. Mm-hmm. I think we all had a very unique set of expertise. And when it applied to one of us, just that person responded.
Yeah.
And it actually flowed really smoothly. I learned a lot from Michael Salter about his work with governments and the UN about online things. And he was saying that probably even within 5 years, someone could submit a picture of themselves when they were children and it would be able to tell them no content has been found, or yes, here's an alert for content that the authorities can then help with.
Just to clarify, in case people don't know, when you're saying content, you mean the child sexual abuse material, like if there's...
Yes, because that is still hard for me to say.
Yeah.
Even though the new words are so liberating and freeing, because when if I have to say child pornography, then it still sounds like it's the child's fault somehow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also, there's more harm than just the there's no harm acknowledged in that.
Right, exactly.
So the changing of the language to child
sexual abuse material
and exploitation, child sexual abuse and exploitation material, including any kind of content. He was also really reassuring. He talked about how older content from before the internet, so like our age and younger, who there was not internet when we were like babies, that content is not distributed as much because people don't want to pay for the images that are not as clear.
Right.
So the new generation of people growing up, their stuff is more at risk, but our stuff is not as distributed as we might fear.
Yeah. Well, and he even said with new stuff today, they only find about like 40% of people that are caught with material are also charged with distributing. So like, even when people are making it, when people are producing it, only 40% of the time are they charged with distributing it. So more than half the time, they're not even sending it anywhere. It's just themselves. So I know that's a really awful topic, but maybe some comfort in knowing that it's less common to be sent out to others.
When they do find your content and the government knows that, there's actually a whole thing you can go through for some reparations. And that's a different thing that someone could talk to Michael Salter about more if they wanted. I think it's more than what I can talk about today. Mm-hmm. But it was actually a really good panel. Everything I said was fully respected. There was no, like, I was worried about verbal manspreading or something just because males, right? Mm-hmm. And like, it was just a fear part of me had because of panels I've been on in the past. But it was, I want to be very clear, it was nothing like that.
Right.
Anytime I wanted to say, if anyone talked too much, it was me. Like, anytime there was something I had to contribute or to speak up for lived experience, I said the things and people let me talk. Like,
yeah.
I did not feel shut down or excluded at all. I want to be really clear about that.
You got a lot of supporting responses from the other people on the panel and you got applause, like, in the middle of the thing.
Right.
I was trying to remember what they actually applauded for. Something about it not being your fault. But
right.
People applied. Applied. Applauded.
Well, I think it was really actually, I mean, I know this was not the purpose, so I don't mean to appropriate the panel's effectiveness for myself, but I think it was actually a really restorative experience for me because I have been able to connect so well with Dr. Robinson now that I get to know him as a person and talk with him about some things. And I already knew Michael Salter some, but it was my first time to work with him directly on a presentation. And then I met Anne, who was so kind,
mm-hmm.
and I was grateful, and I'm so glad she's going to come on the podcast to talk about the work she's doing. But I really have had some negative experiences in the past. And I think this is an example where sometimes because some of the trauma that we have dealt with is so intense or so heavy that we forget other easier, lighter in comparison. Like, we shouldn't be comparing anyway,
mm-hmm.
but then shouldn't is also shiny happy. So it's like, where do you draw the lines?
Mm-hmm.
But we think, oh, these things don't count. Or I think, oh, my trauma is with littles, so Dr. E doesn't have trauma, or this or that.
Mm-hmm.
But I really have had some traumatic experiences, honestly,
yeah.
on panels in the past where that kind of thing has happened. And also, it makes me think back to what we were saying earlier about having access to more strength
mm-hmm.
when our protectors are honored and have space.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that is part of the shift, too. I wasn't afraid to just be myself and take up space. Like, I was on that panel as much as other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my anxieties and fears about doing the panel had more to do with bad experiences in the past where I also did not know how to advocate for myself.
Yeah.
Whereas this time, I was able to express all my thoughts and feelings, have conversations beforehand, advocate for what I needed. I had an interpreter there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it went seamlessly.
Yeah.
Like, the difference was night and day, and it was so healing for me. And I feel like I came out of it with new friends.
Mm-hmm. Can I add a piece that you might want to take out?
Well, I guess. No, Yes.
Just this whole week, it's been clear that you're more inclusive with some of your protector or persecutor parts. Who are your warriors? Because they have different ways of talking, and that has absolutely come out not just with me but around other people.
Oh, I didn't mean to.
No, it's not bad.
I try to mask that.
I know, but you don't need to. nobody was put off by it. Nobody was upset about it. Nobody mentioned it, but it was there and it was inclusive. And I think that's part of what gave you so much bravery. Because you already are brave. You just got to invite that part of you there.
It was amazing. And I cannot speak for other people's experiences, but I had no encounter at all that was unkind.
Yeah.
I know there was one moment where Holly shared with invitation. Someone had invited feedback and she gave appropriate feedback and got shut down and dismissed really quickly. But everyone in the room knew that that's what happened and reassured her and came up to her and backed her up. And then right after that, they got the award for Petals of a Rose.
Yeah.
I hope that's not too much to share because that's not my story, but I think I can message her and ask. But I think it's really important because that I saw that presenter in my session, in my plenary, just like holding their hand and their hands and like, not like in shame, but like eyes wide open, like they were getting it.
Whoa.
And I don't know if they were able to reconnect with Holly or not, but it was really important. Like that changed. I don't know what's going to happen with their project, but that I saw change in those eyes.
Wow.
So well done, Holly, and well done, us.
Yeah.
I feel like, and I know there are some things I'm not talking about yet just because there's so much to process, and we even still have some recapping to finish up, but I feel like I am leaving the conference with every answer I wanted, with positive interactions beyond expectations, and just nourished clinically, professionally, and personally, and so grateful that we can have these hard conversations and brave spaces, like I talked about in the plenary, to be in this together as allies, as shared lived experiences of all kinds, and with dignity. Like this whole weekend was about dignity.
Yeah.
And behaving and interacting in ways that honor each other's experience and wisdom and contributions to the field and to surviving it.
Yeah.
I think it was powerful.
It was so powerful. And I think that I would like to, if it's okay, give a plug for like showing up to these conferences, because so this was my third time being at the annual conference, and it is just a different experience to be around a bunch of professionals, a whole ballroom full of professionals in all different ways in their field, like psychiatrists and psychologists and researchers and social workers and, you know, everyone who get dissociation, who understand complex trauma, don't question it, don't think you're crazy for thinking DID is a thing. Like, there's something so healing and restorative in being in a room full of people that are so understanding and supportive and knowledgeable. And it's not something you can get in just watching a webinar. The webinars are amazing. And please watch all the webinars from ISSTD. I will plug that too. And also, being in person, you can't replicate it. And it is something you don't know until you're here, how much you need it, at least for me. I didn't know how much I needed it until I went to Seattle. And now I want to go every year.
I think that the piece I would add to that is how relational it is.
Yes.
That everyone, even pioneers in the field, are entirely approachable in the hallways and between sessions. You can have a conversation with anyone, like your professional mentor that you never met in person. You can just walk up to at the bagel bar and be like,
"Right,
thank you. I have a question. What about this case?" Like, it is incredible. It is an incredible experience. And part of that relational piece is that it is progressive and ongoing, meaning that when there are ruptures or difficulties, like it's no secret the last year has been hard, right? And even at the business meeting in the close, Christine Forner was like, what are we going to do to repair so that people who are involved are not traumatized? Because mm-hmm. that's not okay. But we're all working with trauma and we're all hurt. And they're like, yes, here's what we're going to talk about for addressing that, or we will be talking about that, and we want to keep healing and keep mm-hmm. doing better. These are important pieces, and the fact that we can publicly acknowledge them and continue healing and continue doing better, the fact that they let me, no, they didn't let me, they invited me mm-hmm. to come and do a plenary about plurality and lived experience, and that we can implement the Brave Spaces framework of this is how we interact and treat each other, and that we can have controversy with civility, but we can also respect and give dignity and all these different things. It is so powerful in healing and modeling at a macro level what we want to do at a micro level. Right. Very meta.
Right. Even in the scheduling of things, the breaks between sessions, not lunch, but like the morning and afternoon breaks, they're not a 15-minute break where you have to run to get to the bathroom and maybe get a drink and then go right to the next session. You get a half an hour so that you can actually interact with people. You can ask a question of someone. You can find somebody in the hallway. Like, and then lunch is an hour and a half. So even the break schedules feel intentional about giving time for those interpersonal connections.
And for pacing, yes. Because there's time to go back to your room and rest or regroup or process, call your therapist, text your therapist, journal.
Yeah, right. She's calling me out because I brought my journal and I brought a bag of, there's probably like 300 markers and pens and colored pencils in there. And I haven't opened it yet.
There's still time.
Yeah, right.
It was a really, really good experience in those ways.
Yeah.
We also may or may not have gone to a top secret Taylor Swift party.
Right.
Which will never be discussed.
Never.
It was good. And last night, we got to really, after the plenary and the panel was done, then there was the business meeting, and then it was done for the day, right? No evening activities last night. We got to go and have dinner together. Mm-hmm. I was like, I need fish and chips right now.
It was an emergency.
It was emergency fish and chips. Because mm-hmm. I had the plenary and the book signing and the thing, so I hadn't gotten lunch. Mm-hmm. And because I was taking a nap.
And cutting your leg. Not intentionally. Accidentally rushed.
It legit accidentally. But then I like how this was such a classic example. Like, we're having our dinner. We got our little date, and it was a lovely time to just decompress together. Mm-hmm. And then Paul Dell walked by, and we're like, it's Paul Dell. Uh-huh. Hey, Paul Dell. Right? And you can have a conversation with Paul Dell. And then other people came down and joined us. Mm-hmm. And we ended up moving tables and staying longer.
We were there for 4 hours.
We socialized. Gold stars.
We closed the restaurant.
We closed it down. But then we were just right here, so we only had to come upstairs. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really lovely.
Yeah.
I am so, so grateful. And I think it was good. So I know there's more to recap and more that will reference, hey, this person we were on the panel with, or this person we did hypnosis with, or this person was whatever. Like, we'll continue to recap. It's going to take some time because it was a lot. Mm-hmm. And we actually have 2 more sessions left today, including ethics with Kathy Steele. So we have a lot more still to do and more of those check marks, right? Like, ethics are one of the things we're supposed to do every year.
Right.
So we need to get that done. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to wrap up so people know we're okay, that we did a good job. I feel like, especially for a conference setting, we did a good job pacing things. We may or may not have had pink donuts delivered one day. We did some Lego. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like we did a good job trying, at least.
Yeah. We did a really good job.
Yay us.
Yay us.
That's like 3 gold stars in one day.
Woohoo! We're done for the whole year, right?
Bam! Check boxes galore.
Yes.
You know where you can put check boxes? In journaling.
Nice try.
Thank you for listening. Your support of the podcast, the workbooks, and the community means so much to us as we try to create something together that's never been done before. Not like this. Connection brings healing. And you can join us on the community at www.systemspeak.com. We'll see you there.